Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thank you one and all for being with us tonight, wherever you are, whenever you are, because you could be listening anytime it's convenient for you, which is very cool. We're going to be talking with my wonderful co-host, Lisa Campion, and we're going to be talking about increasing your psychic abilities, which is just going to be so much fun. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And when I think about psychic abilities, the metaphor that always comes to me has to do with radio, because I'm kind of an electronics geek, and I'm also old enough to remember the first handheld transistor radios. I'm dating myself, which I guess is better than not having any dates at all. And they were little handheld devices with a speaker on it and a headset jack, but it was just for one ear because it was mono, not stereo. Stereo hadn't started yet. And it was straight AM radio. And at that point, there wasn't FM as a thing, as a channel, as a way to get radio stations. So everything was on AM radio. So it was the news stations and the equivalent at that point of shock jocks and all the pop music stations and all of that, baseball games, everything was on AM radio. And people would be walking around holding the speaker on this little tiny handheld box next to their head, or listening, you know, with this single earphone. And AM radio is still around, but it's a short range signal and it's affected by line of sight. If your device can't see the radio tower, you don't get a good signal. So you have to go up the mountain to get a better signal. And when you're in the valley, it's not so good. And it's staticky. And at this point, the only thing on AM is bad talk radio and country music. But back in the day, it was a big deal. And then we got FM. And it's a much clearer signal. It's a different way of creating the radio signals. And you could put stereo on it. So all of a sudden, every kind of music was on it. You could get classical music and jazz and pop music and all kinds of things. And it just totally changed everything. And for quite a while, you couldn't have an FM radio in your car. There was still AM radio in the car, and eventually they worked all that out. And every time things get smaller and faster, it's really about miniaturizing the circuitry so that they can do more with it, which interestingly enough has to do with getting rid of heat, but that's a geeky electronics thing. So when I think about being psychic, most people are walking around in their lives listening to the equivalent of AM radio. They're listening to their five senses. Maybe they're listening. They're probably distracted and not really listening. But they can see things and they can hear things in their environment, feel things on their skin, all of the usual five senses. But anything past that, either they can't experience, or if they do experience it, they think it's weird. So they try not to have the weird experiences. And then there are the people who are what I call broadband. They're not just getting FM music. They're getting all of the stuff you can get on radio frequencies, which is, you know, emergency bands and the police department and weather radio and cell phone signals and TV and all of that stuff is electromagnetic waves that are going past you all the time. But if you don't have the right receiver, you don't pick it up. And so some people, for whatever reasons, have a broadband receiver and pick up lots of different things. They hear things that other people don't hear. They see things that other people don't see. And it's not that the stuff that they're tuning into that they can experience isn't there for the other people. It's just that they don't have a way of tuning into it. And at this point, many of the children that are called indigo and crystal children, are being born very broadband, able to see and hear all kinds of things, and they will never lose that. So, you know, it used to be the kids would get socialized out of their abilities at age 4 or 5, but these new kids aren't. But for the rest of us who are interested in this and have some ability, we'd like to be able to do it better, and that's what we're going to be talking about tonight. So without more chatter from me, let's bring on Lisa Campion. Hey, Lisa, thanks for being here again.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
Yeah, always fun.
Always.
And our topic tonight is how to expand or increase or improve your psychic abilities. And I know you have classes about that, so I'm very curious what you talk to people about.
Sure. Yeah, I loved your analogy about the AM radio, and I had one too. I had my little red transistor radio.
Yep.
You know, the little single earbud that you'd listen to WRKO.
Right. When they first came out, they were with the thing. It was so exciting.
It was so exciting.
It's like when CDs first came out.
Oh, my God. It was crazy. So, I totally remember that. And I think it's a great analogy for the way this is. So when I work with people, like I always say, like, psychic ability is a little bit like athletic ability. Everybody has some, you know,
right.
And no matter, some people have a lot. They're like Olympic level athletes, you know, other people have only a little. But wherever you are, you can get to your potential, whatever that is. But it's like any other skill or ability, you have to kind of work at it, you know? So many times the people that I end up working with in my classes and as in my private clients, are sort of my specialty is training psychics, healers, and empaths. That's like my niche. I tend to work with people that have a tremendous amount of inner talent, but no training. You know, and that's like having a tremendous amount of like musical talent, but no formal training, right? So one of the things that we need is training. You know, and I think there's a lot you can do. Like you need information. You need to know things. And I find that people who have a lot of latent ability, natural ability, are often like very afraid, you know, so fear is a problem. The very, very, very first topic that I ever deal with in psychic development class is fear. Because
right.
If you can't work through your fear, it's a stopping point. You know, so I'll have people like, oh, raise your hand. Who's afraid? And who has let that fear stop them from doing this in the past? And it's pretty much almost everybody will raise their hand.
Right.
You know, so we have to sort of work through the things that people are afraid of, the resistance. Like, you know, and you said before we were on the show, you know, people had bad experiences as children, right? So they shut it down.
Right. Or you grow up with the idea that, oh, that stuff's not real.
Right. Only crazy people do that.
Right. Either it's not real or it's scary.
Or crazy.
Or crazy or creepy. You know, there's all the different things, which basically are saying, let's put this in a box and not look at it.
Yeah. You know, or it's socialized out of it. If you were super psychic and it freaked out your mommy or your daddy that you were psychic as a little one, then you stop doing it, you know, or so like you saw something bad, you saw a weird thing, shadowy spirit in your house, or you saw something creepy and you turn it off, you know. So.
Right.
I think there's having to work through that fear and making a decision to turn it on.
Right, right. There's also the thing that happens to little kids where it just gets embarrassing to have an imaginary playmate after about age 4. The adults don't think it's cute anymore, and they don't want them to go into school with that still being the story they tell.
Yeah. I remember being in like third grade and telling people I could see auras and everybody thought I was crazy.
Right.
I got teased mercilessly about that and, you know, all the way through school.
It's difficult, especially if it's so much your experience the way it was for you that it's hard not to talk about it.
Yeah.
Because it's going on all the time, and it's just what your life is.
That's right. You know, so I think if, you know, if you have a psychic kid, when we talked about this on the when we did our class on psychic kids, like finding a way to normalize it for them is one of the best things you can do for them, or giving them a context to put it in so that they, so you're not making them feel like they're crazy. So I think all psychic students have to deal with, wrestle through that fear. And sometimes it comes up over and over again. So a lot of times, like, my students think it's all fine and dandy until something really real happens.
Yeah.
You know, they have a real experience. And then they freak out because it got real, you know. And that's kind of an earth-shaky experience. It's like a real rock your world. You know, well, if that's real, if a ghost is real, or I saw an angel, if that's real, what else is real?
Right.
Does that mean devils are real? Does that mean demons are real? Does that mean hell's real? Like, what, it opens sort of this door to this unseen world that's very mysterious. And that really will knock you out at the knees frequently.
Right. And especially if the piece that you happen to run across at that point in your development is really scary looking.
Yep.
So that there are two things that come up. One is the fear of, oh my God, this is incredibly creepy. And the other is you think you're going crazy.
Yeah.
Because normal people don't see this kind of stuff.
Right.
When that happened for me, I immediately started meditating and started seeing the lower astral plane. And I was strong enough in my own understanding of who I was to respond to it by saying, well, I don't know what this is, but I know I'm not crazy. So there must be somebody else that has experienced this that can explain it to me.
Well, that was a good, healthy attitude.
Right, right. But not everybody is going to go there. Some people are going to go, oh my God, I'm crazy and I don't want to tell anyone, at which point you shut out the possibility of understanding.
And the lower astral plane is often where, like, newbie psychics get you first, because it's the first dimension off our plane.
Right.
It's kind of the bad neighborhood over there. It's like, you know, where the Ouija board plugs you into.
Right.
And it is, like, you have to lift your frequency higher to get over that, but it is often the first place people encounter, and it's full of mischievous and annoying and harmful, sometimes, spirits. So, yep, that happens.
Yeah, it's one of the things is, you know, I sat down and meditated and knew that I was doing something that was shifting my focus, shifting my consciousness. Didn't expect what happened, but, you know, I knew that I was doing something that for millennia had changed the way people saw the world. So I was able to put it in a context, but this kind of stuff can also happen without trying. Mm-hmm. At which point it's just, where did that come from? And what in the world is that? And what does it mean?
Right. Well, yeah, that's sort of a whole topic, like, that we should talk about sometime, like the sudden psychic opening, you know, mm-hmm. Spontaneous and sudden psychic opening. And those can be very extreme experiences and very, very frightening for people. Like, one day you're wandering around, you're fine. The next day you, like, get hit by lightning or get electrocuted or fall and smack your head or just whatever, have a kundalini experience, and your psychic's gone from 0 to 60 in one day, and it's super disorienting and upsetting and freaky and really, like, bad. It's really, really hard when it happens that way, and sometimes it does.
Right, right. And let's just clarify what a kundalini experience is, which is energy rising up the energy channel along the spine, which is actually a goal of a lot of spiritual practices, but it's very powerful. And when it happens and you didn't expect it and don't know what it is, it's scary.
Yeah, it's really disorienting. It's sort of like the analogy that I give is, like, say you're wandering around in a big room, huge room filled with stuff, and all you have is a candle, and you can see the light that the candle casts around you, you know, like a foot or two around you, right? So that's what you're used to, and then imagine somebody suddenly snaps on the overhead lights, and all right. of a sudden, you know, this huge room is flooded, and you're like, oh my God, there's a couch over there, you know? It's like the couch has always been there, but you never saw it. And seeing everything all at once, those things have always been there, but opening your vision to them all at once is super freaky.
Right.
And upsetting.
Right. And some of it is very strange looking, and it's the stuff that, not fairy tales, because the original fairy tales were not that scary, but that all of the mythology, especially the stuff that's more modern versions of the mythology, has made scary.
Right.
So you see something that looks like something that you've been told all your life is supposed to be creepy and scary.
Yeah.
And it sets off all the alarm bells and freaks you out.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily scary. It's not necessarily dangerous, but
I work with my students and with the analogy of being street smart, you know, and I actually teach a map of the realms, a map, you know, of the over there and all the different creatures and denizens of the other side. If it's angels or fairies or dead people or power animals or whatever part of the over there you're working with, because if you have a map and you know and you have knowledge, then it's like being street smart. Like you and I, especially you, drop you in the middle of Manhattan and you'd be fine. You know what I mean? Because you're street smart and you know, you grew up in the city and you know how to be safe in the city. And if you know, it's really not that big a deal. Right?
Right.
But somebody who's not street
smart. Well, who knows?
Smart,
I haven't been there in 20 years by choice.
Well, you know, somebody who's not street smart, never been to a big city, has no idea what's going on.
Right.
You drop them in the middle of the city and it's a whole different can. It can be quite dangerous if you're not street smart.
Right. And that's because there are people who will notice that you don't have any idea what's going on or what you're doing and will try and take advantage of you. And that's exactly what goes on when, as you were saying, suddenly the lights go on.
Right. Or you just do stupid things because you don't know better.
Right.
You know, like if you don't have any street smarts, you don't know you're not supposed to walk around in a tight little red dress with cash hanging out of your pocket at 2 o'clock in the morning by yourself. You know?
Right. Right. Which is a great metaphor for Ouija boards.
Right. You got it. That's my Ouija board analogy.
I always say the problem with Ouija boards is that they work.
Yeah.
And it's like saying, yeah, let's go down to the worst part of town, to that dark alley. I've always been curious what's in there. And I know there's a door at the end of the alley. Let's knock on it and see whether there's anything good going on.
Right. Maybe they're having a party.
Right. Maybe. And
let's smoke pot in the abandoned mental hospital with the Ouija board on Halloween.
That's a great image.
Okay. Yeah, and if you do that, don't call me. Call David. David will help you. David will get you out of that mess.
I did have an opportunity to clear a psych hospital that overnight was emptied out. It was an active psych hospital, and they had a nursing strike, and all the patients were moved to other places. That was an experience.
Okay. We'll have to talk about that on some other show, but because that
sounds really
interesting. kind of going back, so you need to know what you're doing, you need to have knowledge, you need to have to work through your fear, then you need to have, like, sort of common sense, so one of the things I think, you have to pay attention, and when I work with my students, I ask them to keep a psychic journal, and to begin to write down, whatever dreams, so you need to learn dream interpretation. You need to learn some kind of divination tool, like the pendulum or dowsing rods or tarot cards or something that you can. And I like the pendulum because you can yes or no. Like, say you get a hit, you think something, oh, my God, I got this hit, and you want to find out if it's you can use your pendulum to cross-check. Is it really that? Right. Is it really Uncle Fred? Or is it a demon? Or is it an angel? Like, what, you know?
Right.
And then you begin to record everything in your journal, because the more we pay attention to something, the more it, the bigger it gets in our consciousness, right?
Right. So just to clarify for people, especially with using a pendulum or dowsing rods, that they are tools that are a method to get to the part of your subconscious that psychics typically can access with an extended sense. But if you need the information, it's there, and you can learn to use this little, very simple tool as a way to access it, asking questions. Tarot cards are a little more complex than that, but it's still saying the information is there. I just need to figure out how to plug in and get the information. And so I'll use a tool.
It's really good to use to confirm or deny a hit. So you get a hit for something, and you're going to confirm or deny or get more information by using one of those tools. And they are limited, because they both require yes-no line of questioning. And, of course, it's, you know, pretty hard to break our world down into a binary. It's too complicated a world for that, really. But it's very good for beginner psychics to learn how to trust themselves, because trusting your hits is one of the, you know, most difficult parts. You know, how do you know it's you? How do you know it's a hit? How do you know if you're making it up? How do you know if you're really having a hit, or you're just having a feeling or emotion, or it's your ego or your issues, or like, or it's somebody else's stuff, you know?
Right, or you're an empath and you're picking it up from somebody else.
That's somebody else. Yeah, exactly. So it takes, like, over time, I think with experience, you begin to learn it feels a certain way when it's a real hit. So in my experience, a real hit is pretty neutral emotionally. Even if it seems like it's something you should be emotional about, like, oh, I think there's something going on with one of my kids and it's not so good. And
right.
I'll get a hit like that. But I'll get it like it's a fact and I'm not emotional about it, even though, like, you think I should be. Or if it's my own issues, I'll be like, oh my god, there's something wrong with one of my, you know. And it's
right.
more like, you know, neurotic. It's more my inner neurosis. So like, over time, and I know it feels a certain way in my body when it's a real hit, and it feels another way when it's my own stuff. But that takes practice. And that's the other thing. So you know, we need to practice. I think it's super helpful to work with a teacher. And certainly you can learn some things out of books. I always say it's like trying to learn yoga from a book. Or,
right.
you know, you can get it, kind of, but you know, really not going to get it until you get to a yoga class.
Right, right.
You know?
So we're going to go to a break in a little bit. I want to make sure people know how to find you and tell us a little bit about what you're offering in terms of classes that people can plug into online and that kind of thing.
Sure. You can find me on my website, lisacampion.com. And I have, usually if you go there and you look under my classes, I have live classes. I teach Reiki live if you're local to my area, and I have online classes too. So online beginner psychic development, kind of running all the time, and empathy development running all the time. And then once or twice a year, I teach my bigger, you know, more advanced mastery classes. And you can find all of that on my website.
Right. And of course, your world famous psychic self-defense classes.
Yeah. Yeah. That's fun. Yeah. Psychic self-defense. Yep.
Yep. We will have to do a show about that at some point.
Yep. We absolutely.
Yeah, you know, as you know, one of my favorite topics.
Yes, I do.
So, we will be back shortly, unless we get taller. My guest tonight is my wonderful co-host, Lisa Campion, lisacampion.com, if you want to find her online. And we're talking about psychic development, how to increase your psychic abilities. So, stay with us because we're going to have a whole lot of fun. This is David Franklin Farkas on the Farkas Files, and this is Empower Radio. Don't go nowhere.
Forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and bugs.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you, the enchanted you.
Magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, is that one.
The free to be me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not so far away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong. I'm home, and I love it. I'm home where I belong.
It's always nice to come home, but these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over a million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I be.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg!
Ha-ha! I win!
Whoa! Ah! Sassy! Johnny fell down the well!
I'm wet!
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl! What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold!
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound, health, and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What did he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with my wonderful co-host Lisa Campion, and we're talking about increasing your psychic abilities. So, we were talking about the classes that you offer and some of the things that you're doing with that, but let's just keep going. What else do you tell people that are trying to expand their abilities?
Well, so once you start recording things in your psychic journal, because we know whatever we pay attention to gets more, and you're verifying your hits. I think the next thing that where I see a lot of people make mistakes is they don't they don't listen to the hit. And this is so common. Like, even with intuition, your intuition or your psychic will tell you something, and you're like, yeah, I really should do that, and then you don't. Like,
right.
If you continually get the hit and ignore it, what do you think happens? Like,
right.
your hits dry up.
Right.
You know?
And one of the things I think is everybody gets their hits differently and through different channels. So
yeah.
People think that being psychic is about the bells and whistles, being clairvoyant and seeing things that other people can't see, or being clairaudient and hearing things that other people can't hear. And certainly there are people that have various levels of those abilities. What most people don't realize is it can be really annoying and distracting.
But, yeah, especially the visual.
Yeah. Yeah, depending on the different levels of, and again, it's like radio. You can tune into different levels of information. Some people see auras, some people see entities, some, you know, there's all the different kinds of things out there that you might tune into. And the auditory stuff can get into things that are either telepathy or like telepathy, where you're not hearing something that's very far away, you're hearing somebody in the room. And how do you sort that out?
Yeah. Well, yeah. So, I mean, I love what you just said. It's like we all have our psychic senses, you know. So some people see, some people hear, some people know, some people feel in their body. You know, most people have a kind of a combination of those things. But you'll have, and everybody thinks they want the visual, but it's the most rare. And it's, I think it's actually also the most inaccurate, which can be really wonky.
Mm-hmm.
So you start by figuring out which your strongest one is. So the auditory is much more reliable and much more common than the visual. So
right.
If you, the auditory is like you think you're having a conversation in your head with yourself, but it may be your guides that are speaking to you, or you know, like I have a pretty strong auditory. I bet you do too. Like you get, mm-hmm. you know, there are voices talking in your head, and it doesn't sound like, you know, like weird voices talking in your head. It just kind of sounds like you're talking to yourself. But I know it's not, because this voice often tells me things I wouldn't say.
Right.
You know, like I was
right.
having. I remember once having a fight with my husband, and I think I'm right, and this voice pops in my head, says, he's right, you know, you're the one that's not right. And I was like, hey, wait, and I knew it was my guides, because I would never say that. I thought I was right, you know? And I was like, oh, sugar, I guess I better think, you know, I'm like, gosh, dang it, like, they're saying that, I had to listen, because it's how my guides communicate to
right.
me, so.
Right, and I think, would you say that the most common way of getting information is either feeling or knowing?
Yeah.
Which I think in many ways are the most confusing, even though they're the most common.
They are. I mean, the knowing I think is probably the most common. And that's when you say, like, I don't know why I know, I just do. And
right.
It's kind of like a belly knowing, like your belly knows it, your gut. So it's like that gut, we call the gut instinct.
Right.
And a lot of times your mind will argue with it. You know,
absolutely.
So your mind's like,
but
uh-uh.
In my experience, that's coming in through the crown chakra. It just comes directly into your head, as if it comes out of nowhere.
You get it. Like, well, that's a different kind. So in my experience, the gut knowing is in the belly and the gut. And it's
right.
like, it's very instinct. It's like actually from the third chakra, and it's our instinct. It's very
right.
savvy, and it's never wrong. But other people have a knowing that's more of a cognitive knowing in the head. And really smart people like you get this one, where your guides will just download a fully formed thought into your head like a thought bubble.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's like a moment of insight where you're like, you know, and you get the entirety, like the gestalt of this knowing that pops into your head. That's different than the gut knowing.
Right.
You know, And they're both a kind of knowing, and often I see people have both of those. And when you have the knowing claircognizance, the knowing psychic, and your gut, which is like the animal part of you, the instinctual part of you, and the bubble in your head part agree, you really need to pay attention.
Right. And, of course, as you're learning to sort that out, it's real easy to just go, oh, where did that come from? And what?
And dismiss it.
Right.
You know, so how many times have you done that?
And I think that the difference between people who become psychics in the sense of being able to use this stuff and everybody else is people get that kind of stuff and think, oh, that's weird, and just keep walking.
Right.
And don't pay any attention to it. And the people who know it's important start asking questions.
I have a funny story about that. So one day when I was really, really young, like in my 20s, I was mowing the lawn. And I had this very strong image of this rock coming up from under the blade of the mower and hitting me on the knee. And I was like, oh, I bet that would suck. And I'm still pushing the lawnmower. And then I got this feeling of pain in my knee and like blood, this image of blood gushing down my knee. And I'm like, oh God, I really hope that doesn't happen to me. And I'm still pushing the lawnmower. And then I got one more just like that. And then boom, the rock hits the blade and goes up and smashes my knee, cuts it wide open. I had like 5 stitches in my knee. And I was like, and my guides were like, we gave you what? Like we told you 3 times that was going to happen. You think we were just entertaining you? We tried really hard to get, you know. And I was like, oh, yeah, I guess you have to actually do something about it. Like, you have to listen. You have to act on it. And if you stopped acting, and the thing that's, I think, really annoying to people about this topic, about this particular one, is that real psychic hits, I mean, sometimes we get the psychic hit of like, oh, you're out of milk, you know, or don't forget your umbrella. You know, we do get those.
Right.
But a lot of times the real deal that comes through is stuff we don't really want to hear. You know, your gut, it's going to require work. It's going to be a drag. It's going to push you out of your comfort zone. And so we do the metaphysical version of sticking our fingers in our ears and going, blah, 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 blah. Like, I'm not hearing what you're saying, you know, because if you are real honest to God, like, you know, lightning strikes your crown chakra and you get the download is always going to push you out of your comfort zone.
Right.
And we don't like that.
Right. Leave me alone. Leave me alone. I'm just walking around and trying.
I know. I just want to just have a nice, comfortable life. You know, your personality just wants to have a life, nice, comfortable life. Your guides don't really care. They want you to actualize your potential. And that means you must get out of your comfort zone. And they have their foot in your behind pushing you out of your comfort zone. You know, and we don't like that. So we don't listen. And I notice this happens a lot with people too, like where your guidance will give you a simple instruction. For me, it was quit eating sugar. Quit eating sugar. I got quit eating sugar. It's all they would say for like 2 years. Quit eating sugar. What? Quit eating sugar. What? I don't want to. Quit eating sugar. No, but can you tell me? Quit eating sugar. And finally I did. And then it turns out like I was wicked close to being diabetic and I needed to really do it, you know, and they were like, okay, if you can't do the simple things we ask you to do, why are we going to give you anything? You know, why are we going to give you anything more if you can't even do that?
You got tough guides.
I know I do. They're pretty bossy. And it's sort of like, they make me think of my old martial arts masters, you know? So the martial arts master that I studied with, like you practice the basics over and over and over and over again. And it's only then you learn the advanced stuff.
Right.
Right. So as psychics, we practice, you know, if you sort of do, and I'm not saying you should go overboard and like jump off a bridge because your guides told you to jump off a bridge. I'm not like people can go overboard with that, but there's a little bit of like shutting it down because you don't really want to do what they're telling you. And you have to at least sometimes, 51% of the time, put your money where your mouth is here, and then your psychic will increase.
Right, and it's also a way for you to learn that the stuff is real, and it makes a difference in your life, and it really does guide you to what you need to do. If you don't try it, you never know.
I have a really radical view. You want to hear it?
Absolutely.
It's a little controversial.
Mm-hmm.
So, even though I'm a psychic and I teach psychic development, I'm not always convinced that psychic development is worthy of pursuing and it's for its own sake. I tend to see it more as a byproduct of overall spiritual development.
Mm-hmm.
And I see that as a very worthy outcome. So when we are doing overall spiritual development, maybe we're meditating, maybe we're doing yoga or Reiki or whatever our spiritual practices, which is also like absolute number one tip for increasing your psychic, we're just generally spiritually growing, then our psychic opens as a byproduct of spiritual growth. I think that's quite worthy. And sometimes I see people like sort of chase the dragon here. You know, they're chasing psychic development without doing any personal growth work. And I see that always lead to trouble.
Right. And it's interesting that in most of the Eastern traditions, if you're doing that spiritual work, the things like psychic skills and, you know, other abilities show up.
Yeah.
But the tradition will usually say to ignore them. They're a distraction.
Ignore them. They're a distraction. Exactly.
Because the purpose of the tradition and of the practices is to become enlightened.
I think there's some truth to that.
Not to heal people, not to do interesting psychic things or all the rest of it. So it's a very, there are several things that are very Western, but also very much a part of our time. And one is that we do all of this stuff without separating ourselves from everyday life. So most people are doing whatever spiritual work they're doing, and they're not, they may go for a little while, but they don't go to an ashram. They don't go to a monastery. They don't go to a place where everybody is doing the practice with teachers and you're totally isolated from normal life, from everyday life. And we're doing it in everyday life, which is a dramatic change from what's gone on for all the thousands of years of human development. And the other thing is that people are developing those abilities, and instead of it being something that's seen as a distraction, it's seen as something that you can be of service with.
Right.
So if you develop healing abilities, you want to help other people with it. If you develop psychic abilities and you're not a sociopath, you want to help people with this newfound ability that you have.
And I think that's always a good place to put it. So service to humanity, or service humbly, because I have such a martial arts background to my my spiritual practice, I have sort of like humility and, you know, humbleness and service and lack of attitude and respect.
Right.
Been driven into me from the time I was really young, Jedi Knight training, and I was the Padawan, you know, and we're humble and respectful, right? And that's the way that I teach my students, and that's the way that I feel is the right way to do this. And I've one of their many right ways, but it's one of many right ways. And I see some real problems with people who do psychic development from a very ego place of, I want power or control over other people, or I want to look good, or I want to have a TV show, or I want to be like the Long Island medium and make a ton of money. Not that I think she's a bad psychic at all, but I think other people, you know, look at it as some like thing, some ego-y thing that's going to get them somewhere.
Right. Right.
And I don't think that's a good place to, that always leads to trouble.
Right. And it's typically dangerous either for the person with the skills or the people around them.
Around them, yeah.
And you don't realize that until it backfires. Oh, this is great. It always works. And bam.
You got to pay the bill on that one. Didn't we just do a show on karma? It's bad for your karma.
What's that?
Didn't we just do a show on karma, right?
Right, right.
So
exactly.
That's bad for your karma.
Yeah, karma always.
My last tip is really about spiritual practice. You know, so I think spiritual practice, meditation being my, I think, the primary thing, but eventually you'll get to a point in your psychic development or your spiritual growth where you will stop dead in your tracks if you don't pick up spiritual practice.
Right.
And I don't think it matters what it is. So some, for some people, it's yoga, chanting, prayer. You pray the rosary, go to church. You can do sitting meditation. There's a million different kinds of spiritual practice. I don't think it matters what you do as long as you do something regularly and really practice it as a discipline. It's like, right, like if you want to get in shape, you go to the gym. And spiritual practice, and particularly meditation, is that for psychics.
Right.
What do you think about
exactly
that?
One of the things I always find amusing is that you mentioned praying the rosary. Praying the rosary comes from a Hindu practice of mantra, saying mantras and counting them with what's called a mala, which looks a whole lot like the rosary. And many of the personal practices in Catholicism are almost exact duplicates of the personal practices in Hindu practice.
Right, in Buddhism.
You know, lighting the candles, sitting and focusing on the image of a saint or an aspect of God, chanting prayers over and over again.
Saying the name of God, the names of God over and over again, which is what a mantra practice is.
Right. So the various traditions come from prior traditions and, of course, have forgotten and, you know, would be annoyed if anyone pointed it out. But the ideas and the practices are extremely old, and they've shown up in different ways in different cultures throughout time.
And they really work.
Yeah.
You know? And there's something, too, I think, as we get into sort of intermediate and advanced levels of ability, and I think as a beginner, you can sort of, you know, eat from the buffet of spiritual practice. Well, today I'm going to do a guided meditation, and tomorrow I'm going to do yoga, and the next day I'm going to do the rosary. And that's fine, but if you want to advance past intermediate, you know, and if you want to advance past that and into really advanced, more advanced levels, I think you have to stick to a practice. And I really love the resurgence of the 40-day practice. Because if you commit to doing something for the same thing, I don't care what it is, 40 days on the yoga mat or 40 days of the rosary or 40 days of your mantra with your mala, or just plain old zazen sitting meditation, whatever it is, if you commit to 40 days and you stick with it, you will grow hugely. You will advance spiritually every time you do that.
Right.
It's the discipline. It's that discipline aspect, and you have to sort of sit through your boredom and your resistance and, you know, your crankiness about, I don't want to do it today, and, you know, wrestle with the ego. That's when we really expand and grow spiritually.
Absolutely. And it's a more limited version of the kinds of things that are done all the time if you do separate yourself from everyday life and go into some community where everybody is doing a practice. Then it's all structured.
Right.
And you do all those things every day. And so the way that we can create a small version of that in everyday life is to do something like a 40-day practice or, you know, have a daily practice of whatever it is that you do.
What do you do for your spiritual practice? Do you do something?
A lot of them have fallen by the wayside for various reasons. At this point, it's mostly doing my work, which is very intense and focused, and conversations with my guides. I do meditate, but it's not as consistent as it used to be. And it tends to be more of an energy practice than a typical meditation practice. So it's a very active, you could call it a visualization, but it's me actively dealing with the energy in my body.
Yeah.
So I never was very good at the quiet ones or mantras or that kind of thing. I'm always, oh, what's going on here? Let's fix this. Let's fix that. Mm-hmm. So
I do that too.
I figured.
I do that. Yeah, I do. And I do every night before I go to bed, or I really don't sleep. But I spend, like, it usually takes me half an hour, and I'll spend the first 10 minutes doing what you just said, which is like clearing my chakras, feeling what's blocked in my body, dealing with emotions that are hanging out that need to be handled.
Right.
And I have my journal. Sometimes I write in my journal when I'm in that phase. And I just takes me a while to settle. And if I'm really riled, mm-hmm. it can take me a while. And I just get to a place where then I feel sort of sorted out. And then
right.
I do like a pretty simple breath meditation, you know, like a long, slow breathing the energy up my spine, exhaling out right to the third eye and exhaling out. And I do that until I feel my brain kind of go flat.
Right.
Which
I tend to go to sleep saying the Ho'oponopono statements, the four statements. And I also do that anytime I'm out walking. Anytime I'm doing anything rhythmic, I do it and say, I love you. I'm sorry. Please forgive me. Thank you. Just over and over and over again. And there's something very powerful about repeating whatever your prayers or statements are while you're moving.
Yeah, that's awesome.
While you're doing something rhythmic.
I have mala beads in my car, and if I do mantra practice, it's often when I'm driving.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go through phases of different mantras that I work with, and sometimes affirmations, sometimes mantras, and I'm all over the map with prayer. Could be like straight up Christian prayers to, you know, the old Sanskrit mantras that I love too, and Buddhist ones too, and Kundalini ones. Like I don't know. I just get a kind of a.
What are we supposed to do today?
I get to be in my bonnet about a particular mantra, but I'll do it for a while. I'll do it for, you know, like 40 days and then before I switch to another mantra.
Uh-huh.
When I'm walking or in the car, I do those.
And, you know, we're running out of time, but one of the things that people often don't think of is that there is a healing vibration that's very specific to each one of those practices. So doing those repetitions, especially when you're making a sound, is extremely powerful.
Yes.
So, but as always happens, we're running out of time because we could just keep going forever. So we will do this again soon and with another topic.
I hope so.
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
Thanks so much. It was awesome.
You're welcome. My guest, but not really my guest, she's my co-host, is Lisa Campion. And we've been talking about psychic development and increasing your psychic abilities. And it's so wonderful to have those conversations with you because you're actually teaching this stuff and dealing with lots of people with these issues. So it's absolutely brilliant. Absolutely brilliant stuff you're doing. So go to lisacampion.com and check out what she's offering. Thanks so much, Lisa.
Thank you, honey. Thank you.
And if you happen to get curious about this guy, David, and what in the world does he do, you can go to househealing.com. And cleverly hiding in plain view is every conceivable way I could think of for people to contact me, including a scheduling widget that lets you set up an appointment to have a 20-minute free consultation. I do an assessment of what's going on with a person, place, situation, business, whatever it happens to be, and we can see how my work might be helpful to you. If you want more about the show, and we've been doing this now for 5 years. It always blows my mind that we've been doing it for 5 years now. So we have hundreds of fascinating interviews with amazing people, and you can find them at thefarkasfiles.com. And the whole archive is there, and you can listen directly from the archive, but you can also listen from the Empower Radio app, which is a great way to do it. And we're on all the streaming media outlets, TuneIn, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, iTunes podcasts. If you just search for Empower Radio or the Farkas Files, you'll find all kinds of ways to access it. And that's one of the really cool things about this point in time on the planet is that we do have all these amazing ways to connect, and there are people listening at their convenience using whatever device they've got all over the world, which just blows my mind. Thank you so much for taking some time to listen, and I am very honored that people are doing that all over the place. And, you know, one of the reasons that I do this is that people like you call me up or send me an email and say, I've been listening for 2 years and it makes my day every time. That's just so wonderful. So thank you so much for that. So until next week, this has been David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere. And thank you one and all for being here. You have a wonderful, fantastic week.